And if you are covered under FERS, you already have a TSP account no matter what, right? And then there's most likely already money being contributed to it, but at varying levels based on when you were hired. So let's talk about those dates and the differences between FERS and CSRS.
That's right, yeah. Since the middle of last year, we have had in place something called automatic enrollment in the TSP. And what that does is automatically enroll new hires into the TSP. We have two different types of civilian employees and then, of course, uniformed services employees. For FERS people, it signs you up, you're automatically enrolled, if you will, at 3% of your pay. That 3% that you're putting in generates actually 4% of pay in contributions by the government. So these are added in to yours, bringing the total to 7. The 4% contributed by the employer comes from two sources. The first is what's known as matching contributions. There's a dollar-for-dollar match on the first 3% of pay which any individual contributes to the TSP. And then in addition to that, there's something called the agency automatic contribution. That's an amount equal to 1% of your pay which the agency puts into your account when it is opened. And whether or not you put in your own funds as a FERS employee, you're entitled to that agency automatic 1% contribution. For CSRSers like me, the older guys, the automatic enrollment really doesn't do much because we're not enrolling any new CSRS employees these days. There may be some of us who come back and might get rehired after performing service years ago, but the number is very small.
And then there's another category, which is members of the uniformed services, right?
That's right. Now, for members of the uniformed services, they're like CSRS employees in that they are not eligible for the employer contributions, either matching or agency automatic. In addition, members of the uniformed services are not automatically enrolled in TSP. This was an issue that was discussed at the time the automatic enrollment was put into place, and the feeling was that since there aren't any employer contributions, there wasn't that need to put uniformed services folks in the automatic situation because they weren't foregoing any employer contributions by not contributing. Nevertheless, there is a very good contribution history among the uniformed services, and some of the services have really done an outstanding job in getting the word out there to their new recruits, and we're delighted with that.
I don't know if the board has a real good way to track this or not, but do we have any good numbers on roughly how many federal employees percentage-wise actually contribute their own funds to the TSP above and beyond their deductions that are automatic?
Yes, we sure do. For the FERS employees, we have a participation rate as of May, which is the last number I have, of 85.4%. So they are putting in their own money. Now, a small number of them have come in under the automatic enrollment. The vast majority came in voluntarily on their own. For the CSRS employees, I don't have a good number there because we do not have a denominator. We know the overall number of CSRS contributing, and that's 216,000. Now, we are a diminishing group out there, us CSRSers, so cut us a little slack when you listen to that number and think it might sound low. There aren't many of us left. The uniformed services, on the other hand, have a very large number of contributors. Let's see, uniformed services, 695,000. Now the force right now is about 1.5 million. So that breaks out into an active duty participation rate among the uniformed services of 39.2%. Within that group, Navy among the large services is the leader at 59%.
Now, one of the distinguishing features of the TSP, of course, is it's very low costs. The CNN Money column we were talking about earlier points out that it's that the costs are roughly half of anything that you would find in a private 401k plan. How do you guys manage to achieve such low administrative fees?
Well, first of all, we have a mandate to do that. It is written into our law that we develop investment policies that provide for low administrative costs. So we take it very seriously. That is the measure. There are really two measures that we look at as to our success. The first is keeping costs low. The second is tracking the indexes that we invest in, and we want to make sure that we track those very, very closely so that all participants get the actual market returns that that index provides. And, of course, if you have high administrative expenses, that cuts away from, in essence, replicating the market return. So those are our two motivations. And then additionally, we're just cheap. We like to keep those costs down. We're not engaged in a lot of the sizzle that a lot of financial institutions get involved in to promote their products, which, of course, has to be paid for somehow, that marketing effort. What we've done is taken a low-key approach, working very closely with the employing agencies of government and the services, as I said, and making sure that good educational information gets out there to the eligible pool of participants.
But on the other hand, it's not so simple that there's really only one option out there. You guys have a relatively broad menu of funds.
That's right. We do have a good range, and I was very pleased to see in his CNN Money piece, Walter Updegrave said that the menu of investment options are broad enough to build a well-balanced portfolio but not littered with niche investments, which can happen and which can be a big distraction to people. We have five core funds. Each of them is a fairly well-known or a very well-known index, the first being the S&P 500 index. Our C fund tracks that. The second is called the Wilshire Completion Index. Our S fund tracks that, and that index is essentially the rest of the domestic stock market minus the S&P 500 companies. Thirdly, we have something called the EAFE, Europe, Australasia, and Far East Index. That's an index maintained by Morgan Stanley, and that covers investments in 20 nations around the world. Finally, we have the Bond Index Fund, which tracks a very large domestic corporate grade bond investment fund. Those are the four privately managed funds. Then we have our G fund, the Government Securities Fund, which is invested in a special issue securities by the Treasury Department that provide the rate of return on average that's given to intermediate and long-term Treasury securities.
You mentioned your mandate to maintain low costs. Is that the only driving factor in why these all tend to be very conservative investing strategies? I mean, I guess my question is, for feds who want to take a more aggressive approach with their retirement investing, why is there no such option for them in the TSP?
Well, Congress did decide that it wanted to be conservative in setting this up 25 years ago. That's why it selected the index fund approach, because what that does is produce a couple of good results. First of all, the Congress did not want the federal employees' retirement organization or investment organization to be a market mover. There are a large number of federal employees. It was clear this was going to be a large fund, and Congress did not want there to be an entity known as the Thrift Investment Board that picked winners and losers in the stock market. The way that we do it by going in through index funds means that we are simply tracking all of the market activity that's going on out there and giving people who are employed by the federal government an opportunity to invest in what is known as a broad index. Investing broadly is a way to get average stock market returns, which over time have shown that they will grow.
And so also I understand one other thing that differentiates the TSP from a lot of private 401k plans is that you can there's no cap on the percentage of salary that you can contribute towards your own TSP, right?
That's right. Up until the early 1900s, the early 2000s, the end of the 1900s, there was a limit on contributions. Indeed, when we first started, CSRS employees could contribute 5% of their basic pay, and FERS employees could contribute 10% of the basic pay. Those contribution levels were raised over a five-year period between 2001 and 2006 and eventually completely removed in 2006 so that people could contribute up to what is known as the Internal Revenue Service elective deferral limit. Now, actually, that is a limit that is in law. It was established many years ago as the $7,000 limit, but IRS was given the authority to adjust it upwards based on a certain economic model and growth in the economy. And it has done so over the years, so that $7,000 limit is now $16,500. And all participants in the Thrift Savings Plan may contribute up to $16,500. Additionally, as Walter Updegrave points out in his piece, members of the uniformed services can make additional contributions that are not tax deferred. That 16.5 is based on a limit in the tax code on deferred contributions. Uniformed services members in a combat zone receive pay that is not subject to federal taxation. So, from those amounts, uniformed services members can contribute additional amounts. And then finally, there was, I'm sorry, you're going to have to cut this, but there was
no problem.
Something else I can't think of right now that I was going to say, and it slipped out.
That's right. No worries. Let's see, what else did I want to ask you? Oh, yeah, I just wanted to ask you real quickly, how much work does TSP do in marketing and outreach of these funds to various federal employees to increase the rate at which people contribute?
We don't think of ourselves as doing really any marketing at all. Outreach we do, and we do that with our educational program. Much of it is provided through the website, which we think is our best way to meet the needs of participants and their understanding of the TSP. But additionally, we work very closely with the employing agencies of government. For instance, there's a big annual meeting that's held by OPM. It's called the Annual Benefits Conference, where all of the agencies get together and compare notes on what they're doing in terms of helping federal employees better understand their benefits package, of which the TSP is a big part. We participate in that through the agencies. We have what are called TSP coordinators who funnel the information to the employees in a particular employing agency and get back to us with any questions that they have so we can be fully responsive.